The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Elkins moves the minutes of April 3rd. Any additions or corrections to the minutes?
They look fine to me. I'll move their approval, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You barely made it, Representative Elkins. But you got her done. You got her done. Thank you. So the minutes are approved. Okay, we do have a quorum, so let's go to the agenda today. Kind of a busy one here today, but we'll work through these best we can. If we could start with House File 1016, a Lawrence bill, if you could please.
Recording in progress.
Wish to testify with you here, or are you sitting there with all your friends?
Okay. There today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We do have some. Oh, you do have friends. Okay. I always sit up there by myself. So, okay. So I will move House File 1016. I will now move the H1016A1 amendment. I believe that's an author's amendment. Is that correct, Representative Lawrence?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. So I'll move that amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like, and especially because it gets rid of some dots, if you will. Any discussion on the author's amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lawrence, on that. So now we have the bill as the author would like. Could you please present your bill to the committee, sir?
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much. My name is Brian Lawrence, and I am bringing before you House Files 1016. I appreciate you for moving that to the table today. A little bit about it is House File 1016 is a bill that just establishes a number or base formula for the new city of Baldwin. The new city of Baldwin is located in northeast Sherburne County, the northeast corner of that. As a township, it was the third largest township in the state of Minnesota. As a city, it has a population of 7,200 people, 83 miles of road. It is City Hall, Fire Department, as well as its own planning and zoning. It was incorporated in the summer of 2024. It is the newest city in the state of Minnesota. Although it was incorporated in 2024 and through the incorporation does not establish this value for the local government aid. And so that's why I'm here today, is to bring this bill before you, which establishes the value for the new city of Baldwin in the state of Minnesota. With that, we've got the League of Minnesota Cities with me here today that I will allow to speak on this behalf as well.
Please state your name and who represent for the record, please.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, my name is Beth Johnston, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. First, we would like to congratulate the city of Baldwin for being the newest city in the state of Minnesota, bringing us to 856 cities. Across Minnesota, LGA is critical to ensuring local governments, like the city of Baldwin, are able to provide basic services and infrastructure without an over-reliance on the property tax system. This allows cities to fulfill state mandates, provide infrastructure improvements, and critical services to residents, overall contributing to the state's economic well-being and prosperity. LGA is a fundamental tenet of the state-local fiscal partnership, and cities like the state are facing increasing costs to provide services and maintenance and construction costs, aging infrastructure, and different uncertainties with federal funding. Local government aid provides a vital role in ensuring cities across Minnesota can provide these services without disproportionate levels of property taxes. So we thank you for your time and attention, and just wanted to highlight the importance of local government aid for communities across the state.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Anyone in the audience like to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Representative Lawrence, don't mean to put you on the spot here, but you said that they were the third largest township in the state. Would Marion be the largest outside Rochester? And then who's the second one? Maybe Ms. Johnston.
Oh, you're testing my knowledge with townships, but I would say I think White Bear Township is the largest in Ramsey County.
Okay, then I'll bet you. Yeah, Representative Hewitt.
I do have a question, long as we're talking geography.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. But if it doesn't mistake me, the last new city we had was in Representative Roach's area, which is Empire. Is that right?
I believe so.
Representative Lawrence? Representative Roach, is that correct?
I believe Empire. That is correct.
Okay. Yes. Credit River as well in Scott County was.
Okay. Are there any questions regarding the bill? I let everybody astray. That's on me. Anyone with concerns? in the audience here? Does the department wish to testify? Okay, we'll pass on that. Okay, any other questions for members? Otherwise, we'll have Representative Lawrence wrap it up on the 1016 as amended.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much. I just ask that you support this bill and support the city of Baldwin as they start out in this new role as a new city in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you, Representative Lawrence. I renew my motion to the House File 1016 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Lawrence. Okay, members, item next is House File 2800. And I believe there's an amendment, so I will move House File 2800 or... Okay, we'll just wait till the author gets here because there's a couple things we need to do on this one. So please just lay that one over until Representative Fogelman arrives, if you would. Okay, item next, House File. Which one's that? Oh, let's go with the Fogelman bill. Okay, so the A1. Is there another one, or is that just the letter of support? That's the letter of support. Okay, welcome to the committee, Representative Fogelman. I will move House File 2800, so it's before the committee. Then members, we have a H2800A1 amendment, and what we're doing with this amendment is we're adding two cities that find themselves in the same situation, or Odin, the city of Odin, and the city of Trotsky. Okay, two-year bill. Well, first let's get the amendment on there so it's in the shape the author would like. I'll move the H2800A1 amendment. A discussion? Hearing none, all favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? That's a heavy load. Passes. Okay, a burden to bear, but let's go. Okay, so two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I have before us a bill relating to taxes, 2023 penalty forgiveness to the city of Alpha. I also have an online testifier. I'd like to turn it over to them.
Okay, let's have the online testifier. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, please.
Hi, my name is Kelly Socek. I'm the city clerk of Alpha.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm here on behalf of the city of Alpha to request your consideration for us to receive the second half of the 2023 local government aid payment of $18,472. The city understands that it was not received due to not meeting the state audit deadline. In all honesty, the deadline was not met due to the previous city clerk just kind of sort of stopped doing her job. And when the mayor and council confronted her about it, she quit. I came in September to piles of paperwork just shoved in drawers, bills not paid, checks not mailed, etc., which our auditor then had to organize before he could complete any audit. That's what caused the delays. But I'm here just, I want to assure you that measures have now been put in place to organize the day-to-day tasks, more updates and reporting to the mayor and council to prove that tasks were being completed timely versus just my word for it. And we have stayed in compliance with all reporting deadlines since I arrived. The issues with the previous clerk cost the city thousands of dollars in late fees to both the IRS and the state. So this payment of the $18,472 will definitely help get the city back on the right track. As I'm sure you know, the local government aid funding is critical for small towns like ours. So thank you for your consideration.
Okay, any question of the Alpha City Clerk? Okay, anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Anybody with concerns? Department like to testify? Okay, member questions. Any questions? And again, this is a forgiveness so that they get their LGA payment. Chair Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just from Ms. Templin, if you could just explain why on the revenue estimate, Ms. Highmark, why the revenue estimate? Oh, wait. So is this for the original bill, not as amended? Is that revenue estimate, or is it, for the bill as amended?
Ms. Highmark, is this for the bill as amended or the original bill?
Madam and Mr. Chair and members, this is with the A1 amendment. It does have the City of Alpha, which part of their payment was withheld, and that would be reflected with the amount in fiscal 2025. The cities of Odin and Trotsky, their payments were withheld within the current biennium, and so payment to these cities would not have a fiscal impact.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was asking, of course. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions of members? With that, I will renew my motion. Well, let's have the author wrap it up for us here.
Again, thank you, Chair and committees, for hearing this. And on behalf of the City of Alpha, thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. So we love Alpha. We love Trotsky, and we love Odin. So I will renew my motion that House File 2800, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over, laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Fogelman.
Chair
Swedinsky.
Do you know, just a quick question for you, because you usually know this, do you know what the high school mascot for the City of Odin is?
Well, it's Odin Butterfield.
Okay, but what were the original Odins called?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either. So that's okay.
We'll have House Research look into this. So we need the answer to that. Is it still Odin Butterfield? The school district? I think it is. I think it's where Nellis Pearson is from, former member. So, okay, with that, let's go to Anderson PE. Representative Anderson, who's that guy with you?
One of my favorite people from the
past. Me too. So, Representative Anderson moves the House File 156. Are there any amendments? There is. Let's get the bill in the shape the author would like. So, Representative Anderson moves the H0156A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us as amended. 2-year bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members. The House File 156 provides a sales tax exemption for a regional facility in Olmsted County. This is a Graham Park Regional Exhibition Center and the surrounding park around it. So I'm going to turn this over to my testifier, who can explain the project more in depth. Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Dave Sendrum, Olmsted County Board of Commissioners.
And, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, it's good to be here today, and members appreciate the opportunity. This is a project, and you all get these sales tax exemptions on materials related to construction. And our project's not unlike probably a number of those that you have. What this is all about, though, is a facility that the Olmsted County Board is in the process of planning and subsequently will construct on the what we call Graham Park, which is really the Olmsted County Fairgrounds in Rochester. It's a central area that's been part of our city actually since 1919, actually, and gifted to the city by Dr. Graham. In the early days, this was on the outskirts of the city. Now, of course, it's on the almost in the center of the city, and it's certainly a great piece of property. As fairgrounds usually go, probably in every one of your districts, as you might have them, fairgrounds get old, construction or the buildings get old, and so on and so forth. What we've got here is a regional exhibition center, not only designed to support the fair, but to make that property certainly more useful year-round. So we're talking about an 80,000-square-foot building, which is substantially large, as you might contemplate. And then beyond that, not only having it for the fair, but certainly programming it for use throughout the year for events, whatever they might be. The trend is, though, towards agricultural-related events. But it certainly could be other things. But program that thing so it's a useful community and regional tool throughout the year. Again, the sales tax is all about helping us get this done. We asked initially in a bonding proposal for $20 million. We gratefully and appreciatively received $8 million. That leaves, and with some additional costs which now have occurred on the building, we're talking about the county picking up $34 million on this building off property tax. And so any amount of help, Mr. Chair and members, that you might offer with respect to a sales tax exemption, every dollar counts on these things, and we'd certainly gratefully appreciate it. Certainly stand for questions.
Any questions for Commissioner Senjum? Anyone else in the audience like to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? I think Representative Anderson, we'll have you wrap it up. To the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is a very this is a regional project. It's a worthy project, and we've supported this as a legislature. And I ask that you include this in our omnibus bill. So, thank you.
Okay, Representative Anderson, P.E., moves that House File 156 as amended be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Commissioner Senjum. Good to see you. Item next, we're going to switch it up just a little bit here. We're going to go to House File 2062. Were we going to have noise? Oh, he's coming. Okay. So, welcome to your committee. Representative Robbins moves House File 2062. Representative Robbins moves the H2062A1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? This is to get the bill in the way the author likes, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to explain it if you want.
Okay. So, Representative Robbins moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you, Greg. Okay. So with that, we now have House File 2062 before us as amended to your bill. And Representative Norris has a very similar bill, so we'd like to hear from both members of the committee on this bill. Who would like to start out?
I'll start, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Robbins, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a vendor allowance bill that would give businesses the opportunity to retain a portion of the sales tax that they remit to the state to help pay for the cost of them serving basically as the state's tax collector. This bill has been around for many years before my time in the legislature. At one point, Chair Davids was an author of this bill. Former Representative Bob Detmer and others on both sides of the aisle have authored this bill. In the Senate, it's also being authored by Chair Rest. So the idea is that the businesses in the state serve as the state's tax collector, and that is a cost to them. And we'll hear from some of the testifiers about that cost. But I want to just flag for members why we're doing the author's amendment. The amendment is actually replacing my bill, which had higher levels of percentages businesses would retain, and replacing it with, wholly, Representative Norris's bill. And the point of that is because we all agree this is an important priority, and Representative Norris's bill is more affordable. So that is why we just decided to work together on this and try and get something across the finish line to help our small businesses. And with that, I'll turn it over to Representative Norris.
Representative Norris, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and want to thank Representative Robbins for the opportunity to co-present on this issue that we've both been working on. I've been pleased to work with the retailers on this concept of a vendor allowance for a number of years now. And you know, one of the things that is kind of increasing the importance of providing this vendor allowance is the proliferation of local sales taxes. As more and more of these local sales taxes come online, it adds to the complexity that especially our small businesses who don't have a huge accounting department to manage this for them, they have to, you know, it's oftentimes the owner who's doing the books by themselves trying to figure out, you know, what tax needs to get paid to which jurisdiction for some of these local sales taxes. Another conversation I've had with Vice Chair Joy that's hitting a lot of businesses, again, small businesses in particular, is credit card fees. And you think about it, if you're paying with your credit card, and let's say for simplicity's sake that you have to pay a dollar of sales tax on your purchase. Well, if you're paying that dollar of sales tax with your credit card, the vendor is only getting maybe 95 cents, 97 cents back into their bank from the credit card company, and yet they still need to remit that full dollar to the state. And so, you know, 3 cents, 5 cents may not make a difference on one transaction, but you multiply that over thousands of transactions, maybe millions of transactions over the course of the year, and it really adds up, again, for small businesses in particular. So I think this is a real common sense solution that can be a big help to our Minnesota business community, especially those small local Main Street businesses.
Thank you, Representative Norris. I believe we have several testifiers. Sir, if you please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Hi, my name is Troy Redding. Morning, Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Troy Redding, and I am owner of Ally Restaurants. We own and operate Rock Elm Tavern in Plymouth and Holman's Table here at St. Paul Airport. I am here today to share my support of the amendment and of House File 2062. Operating profitable restaurants has never been easy, but over the past 5 years, it has virtually become impossible. Rising costs, wildly fluctuating cost of goods, which are only going to increase, and skyrocketing credit card fees are causing a new reality in what consumers are paying. I, like many of my peers, work diligently to cut costs and increase productivity to try and balance a razor-thin margin while being a value for our guests. Let's get to some numbers. 10 years ago, my credit card fees were 2% of our net sales. This past year, they were over 3%, a total of $187,000. That's an increase over 10 years of $65,000 that we need to pay to the banks to collect our revenue. In 2024, Ally Restaurants collected and paid $570,000 in sales tax for the state and $17,500 in credit card fees to collect that money, not to mention the time and the cost of calculating and processing these payments. As a taxpayer and consumer myself, I know that any municipal agency, federal, state, and city, charges me the cost of using my credit card to pay. While I could charge my guests that fee, I am in a business that relies on people's disposable income. Passing credit card fees to my guests is a risk to my business. Based on my 2024 sales of $6.14 million, this bill would allow me a credit of $6,000. While not covering the cost of collecting sales tax, it would at least offset some of the increases. I urge you to support this amended bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any member questions for Mr. Redding? Okay, we have another testifier. Thank you, sir. Please state your name and who represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Newsted with Minnesota Retailers. I work with about 1,200 retail storefronts across the state here. Thank you so much for hearing this bill, and to many of you around the room, including Mr. Chair, for supporting it in the past. We really appreciate it. Thanks to Representative Robbins and Representative Norris for working collaboratively on this bill and recognizing that there's some costs in collecting sales tax. I want to just highlight real briefly, Mr. Chair, one of the neat features on how this bill has evolved over the years. You'll see there's a tiered structure in the bill. That tiered structure is designed to recognize that different retailers with different models might have different cost structures in the bill. Basically, it gives the largest percentage to the smallest retailer that may not be quite as sophisticated in its collection practices, and a less percentage to a larger retailer. So we think that's kind of a neat feature of this bill, and maybe the first time we've talked about it in this committee. Real briefly, Mr. Chair, retailers are collecting about 1 in 4 general fund dollars. So when the state goes to provide great services to Minnesotans, retailers are remitting sales taxes, and those are about 25% of the general fund. And as you'll hear today, we certainly actually appreciate the opportunity to be a good partner with the state, but that partnership does come at a cost. When you look at training, point of sale systems, credit card processing, as you heard, accounting, remitting, and heaven forbid you go through a sales tax audit itself. So I just want to point out that there are cases for vendor collection allowance, and large of those cases are within state government itself. There's instances where the state pays itself a VCA or vendor collection for the purposes of processing and remitting sales taxes. So we'd love to see Minnesota join the 27 other states that do this. There's great precedence for it, and for those of you that are streamlined sales tax enthusiasts, there's principles within that body which support this as well. So as Representative Robbins, Representative Norris mentioned, there's great bipartisan support for this, not only in this body, but the other body across the street. And we do hope to continue to work with the committee on this. I'll end with just saying, you know, one of the magic in the structure that the two representatives have is we can play with the percentages and we can play with caps. So when we get to a point when we have some money available, we'd love to be able to figure out what those numbers could look like, and this sets the stage for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you very much. I believe we have two more. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Hillary Fetter, and I am a Main Street business owner in Hopkins, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Norris, Representative Robbins, Chair Davids. As I mentioned, my name is Hillary Fetter, and I run a small business in Hopkins for the last 36 years. I have been collecting and remitting sales tax for all that time, and I will tell you that the complexity of both collecting and remitting has gotten so complex. In 1989, when I went into business, the state of Minnesota had a sales tax of 6% across the entire state. If you were standing in my store or you were a resident of the state of Minnesota, I charged you 6% sales tax. Today, sales tax rate varies based on municipalities, cities, and of course our state sales tax. If you're standing in my store and you're not from Minnesota, I will charge you sales tax. If you are a Minnesota resident and you ask me to ship what you've just bought to the state of California, I do not charge you sales tax. Learning, understanding, and keeping abreast of our sales tax code is ever-changing, and I have three employees who are responsible for managing, understanding how to charge our clients sales tax when they're purchasing something, and then being sure they are remitting correctly. And I am responsible for the oversight of all of that. I have been through a sales tax audit. It is not fun. I would be happy to share that there were $50 in errors over a five-year period, which were really human errors. So I understand how this all works and the benefit of trying to find a way to remunerate small business owners for some portion of the time invested both in training employees, actively having them both collect from clients and then remit correctly each and every month to the state of Minnesota so that we are in compliance. I would appreciate your consideration of this bill and understanding how it works and how it would affect small businesses for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Fetter? Now, I'm just wondering, I used to collect sales tax. I was a Watkins man, went door to door, and so I collected sales tax, sent it in, and I always tried to be very, very accurate. I want to be right on, but what's the statute of limitations on that? I'll check that offline, sorry. Okay, any questions for Ms. Fetter? Well, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I believe I have one more, Logan McKee. And then is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Okay, welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Logan McKee. I am owner and operator of Games by James. We were founded in 1979. First, I'd like to thank Representative Robbins and Norris for presenting this. This is obviously, this issue's been around for a long time, and I'm excited that it's still relevant and that there's some effort being put in. For a small business owner, family-owned business like myself, this is significant. So I collect about 8 to 9% sales tax from my customers. Almost 90% of them is on credit cards. We have 7 locations in 5 cities in Minnesota. So we collect for the state as well as counties and cities. Last year we collected almost $500,000 in sales tax, and most of that was through credit card transactions. My sister handles the bookkeeping. She spends a few hours each month calculating and remitting. Fortunately, we only operate in 5 cities. But with that, the cost of collecting sales tax between credit card fees and the labor is easily over $10,000, and it rises as taxes go up and credit card fees and inflation. I expect these to continue to grow, and I'd much rather use this money to better my business or for employee compensation. We used to sell online years ago, and it was actually so complicated, we just collected 6.5% from everybody and then just paid the rest ourselves. The software was pretty expensive to calculate it, and this is just one of the reasons why it's hard for small businesses to operate online. I guess I'd like to talk about something that I haven't heard up here yet, which is I know the state of Minnesota understands the costs of collecting sales tax. For example, if I go to pay my taxes with a credit card, I have to pay an additional 2.15% if I use a credit card. And what really stands out is that Minnesota has a vendor collection allowance for itself. They keep a portion of the sales tax that I hand over as to offset administrative burdens of collecting sales tax before they hand it off to the counties and cities. The reality is businesses like mine face significant costs in collecting and remitting sales tax. In fact, 27 other states recognize this burden and provide a vendor collection allowance to help businesses manage it. I respect that the cost of collecting sales tax is important, and it funds our government and all the important programs that we need. But I ask you to remember that these costs fall entirely on the business owners who sell taxable goods. I consider the state of Minnesota a business partner. Please help me succeed by offering a vendor collection allowance and share the responsibility of collecting sales tax for this great state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. McKee? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McKee. What new games are you really excited about?
Mr. McKee?
We have lots. The Wingspan is a popular, kind of like Settlers of Catan. It takes a lot of time before games actually get popular. The ones that get popular really fast usually burn out and fizzle, like the, I don't know, apples to apples type games. But yeah, if you like lighter strategy games, I recommend Wingspan.
Anna Freiberg? Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for members? Would the department like to weigh in? Okay. Thank you very much. If Representative Robbins and Norris could wrap it up. Gomez. Chair Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks to Representative Robbins and Representative Norris for working on this bill. I just need to mention that part of the complication that businesses are facing in collecting sales taxes is because of the proliferation of local option sales taxes. There are so many kind of externalities and reasons why having a complete patchwork of sales tax regimes across the state is a really, really bad idea. I mean, you know, to me, one of the kind of foundational principles of a good tax system is its simplicity and its administrability. And, you know, as we look, unfortunately, there's this map, but unfortunately, it doesn't actually convey the complication that businesses are facing, because as it says, there's 136 localities with special sales and use taxes in place. Pat Dalton, who used to work with House Research and was on the local option sales tax working group that we had a couple of years ago, talked about the example, which I always think of like the guy who rents out a bouncy house. And so, you know, if you have a brick and mortar location, I mean, there are some challenges in if you're sending products out the door, but when you have a truly like mobile operation like that, you know, it's possible that every different place that he brings a bouncy house over the weekend has a completely different sales tax rate. And, you know, if you're a small operation, how are you supposed to track that? So I just wanted to mention that. There are a lot of reasons why having a, like, non-uniform sales tax system across the state makes no sense, makes our tax code more difficult to administer, is not fair to businesses, is not fair to you know, localities that don't have a big sales tax base. And so this is just, you know, a proposal that is a good proposal that we all can agree on, you know, that addresses this challenge faced by businesses. But we just have to say, like, we're creating a problem that in order to solve, we would have to spend tens of millions of dollars. And so, you know, the things that we do have consequences, including, you know, moving toward authorizing more and more municipalities to impose their own local sales taxes. So thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the authors again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you to all the testifiers who came. This bill is long overdue, in my opinion, and I really hope we can at least make a start. I, in good faith, am working with Representative Norris to keep the cost as low as possible. Just so you know, the range for the vendor allowance in this amended version is 0.5% to 1.5%. In my original bill, I went up from 1.5% to 2%. And so we really are trying to understand the fiscal reality and keep the cost low. But I would note that Minnesota has the sixth highest sales tax rate in the country, and 27 other states do this. And the average range for the percentage of the vendor allowance is much higher in other states. It ranges up to 5%. And so we are asking for just a very small amount to go back to the businesses that really are the state sales tax collector. And as was noted by our testifiers, the state gives itself a vendor allowance when it's remitting back to the locals. And I think we should at least be fair and do the same for our businesses who are working so hard and provide 25% of the revenue to our general fund. So I appreciate your consideration, members. I hope we can find a way to get this ball rolling.
Thank you, and Vice Chair Norris.
Chair Davids, thank you. This is a common sense bill. It's a bipartisan bill. It's a scalable bill. I hope we can find a way to get something done on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Representative Robbins renews her motion that House File 2062 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, and thank you to all the testifiers. Item next, House File 3051. I don't see any amendments. I will move. And members, you have some things in the packet here. Letters of support, I believe, some different, yeah, okay. Okay, so I'll move House File 3051, and it'll be later for possible inclusion. This bill provides a sales tax exemption for admission to several golf sporting events here. If the witness could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
It's
House File 4. House File, no,
close. Almost as good.
It's right up there. House File 3051, I have moved that. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. I believe we're going to have some audio here or some visual here at some point. So it's the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Phil Anderson, General Manager, Hastings National Golf Club, PGA of America Board of Director member. Thank you to members of the committee for your time today. Today's presentation is about an opportunity for partnership for the state of Minnesota with the PGA of America now and into the future. Why is this important? The state of Minnesota has the third highest golf participation rate in the entire country. We've got 11% of our residents are currently playing golf with 578,000 golfers in the state of Minnesota. This industry is a $3 billion impact with 1.9 directly, with over $1.1 billion in wages and benefits, with over 34,800 jobs in the state of Minnesota related to golf. Tax-wise, $311 million going to the state, $282 million federally. This continues to be a huge growth opportunity, and we're touching all elements of the state of Minnesota with golf, especially in tourism, community impact, across the board, and really preserving green space. So intangibles are significant. Championship golf continues to be a driver of awareness of the sport and inspiration to participate. It also continues to drive tourism here in the state of Minnesota. We've worked with Explore Minnesota to better understand those numbers over the last couple of years. In 2024, we had over $130 million spent at golf courses by tourism, but the bigger winners in this entire industry is lodging, food and beverage, entertainment, with over $362 million being spent. We certainly just heard from the retailers a minute ago, and we continue to see significant impact to them as well with visitors to the state of Minnesota, with over $176 million being spent in the last year. Golf landscape has changed, and what I'm here to tell you today is this landscape is evolving, and effectively organizations are making decisions on site selections and where they're going to take major championship golf now and into the future quite a ways out. The 2051 U.S. Open's already been determined where that's going. We're in a position right now that we're being under a small group of clubs that are being considered for a significant slate of championships, and these organizations are looking for partnerships as they are bringing significant economic impact to the states that these events are hosted in. This map up here shows you a little identification of really our competition in this area, and these organizations are trying to grow the game of golf across the country. So they are going to pick a Midwest site, and the Midwest site that they pick, they will be here for years to come. We are looking at multiple championships in the 30s and 40s, and one of these locations is going to get it. The feedback that we're getting from our partners is that they are looking for state participation and partnership. We've seen many other states that we're competing with provide direct funding to these organizations due to the significance of the economic impact. That is not the ask today. The ask today is a tax exemption on tickets related events, and that is a great way to show support of that organization, to let them know that the state of Minnesota is a partner and wants these events here now and into the future. Right now, we have two events coming. We have in 2026 the Women's PGA Championship. This is a global event with the best women players in the world, which will be held at Hazelton National Golf Club in 26. It also promotes women in leadership. There's an amazing summit that brings in global leaders, businesses, and really, you know, produces some of the best conversations and summits that you could possibly attend. In addition to that, many people are familiar with the results of the 2016 Ryder Cup. We have the 2029 Ryder Cup coming back, hosted by the PGA of America. And this is the ultimate market event for the state of Minnesota. 667 million households tune in to watch the Ryder Cup in over 48 countries. They're going to see lakes. They're going to see beautiful green grass. They're going to see the state of Minnesota broadcasted for an entire week. The significance of this global event continues to be the biggest event in golf. And again, we want to continue to support the organization that's bringing that and remain under consideration well into the future to host this event.
In the bill, Mr. Anderson, to the, if you back up just a second, the women's 2026, what location was that? Was that Hazeltine?
That is at Hazeltine.
Hazeltine. Yes. Are these all Hazeltine?
Both the women's PGA and the Ryder Cup will be hosted at Hazeltine National.
So do we have the Ryder Cup locked down?
We do in 2029.
All right. Let me know when tickets go on sale.
We'll do.
Amazing event. Okay, please continue.
I think, you know, just to finish up the Ryder Cup, beyond the telecast and the global nature of this, social media and the marketing behind it, this is a huge initiative in talking with Explore Minnesota, and we are expecting almost 1 billion impressions that week while on property. So the magnitude of this event is very significant. In the bill, we've defined World Championship Golf Tournaments as four different events that are ticketed events: Senior PGA Championship, Women's PGA Championship, PGA Championship, and Ryder Cup. These are the events that we are looking for a tax exemption to help show our support from the state to the PGA of America. We also are asking for ancillary events. There has not been a lot that has taken place historically, but that's continuing to evolve and grow with these global events. We had an event downtown at the Orpheum with David Faraday and others to really hype up the event and continue to promote what's occurring. We are asking for an exemption on ancillary events related to ticketed events as well. This is an opportunity to partner with those in the community and continue to grow events at event centers, restaurants, and continuing to drive economic impact here in the state. One thing that I want to be clear about is that Hazeltine National is a venue. We have many venues here in the state of Minnesota, and we've independently operated 14 championships. We've been driving significant economic impact to the state of Minnesota. It's been an incredible ROI from a venue standpoint, and our asks have really not been anything. We are asking today, and we are telling the state of Minnesota that if we are going to host future championships, we need partnership into the future. We need to show our partners that the state of Minnesota wants these events to come back. The impact of the events are job creation, vendor creation, support businesses all over the state of Minnesota. It also promotes civic duty. We have over 15,000 people raise their hands to volunteer. We had room for 5,000 people to volunteer. Parents are teaching their kids how to have civic duty and to participate in events and support the state when global events do come to town. With a partnership, the PGA of America is looking at potentially some permanent infrastructure. As we've heard from many testify today, costs are going up. The transportation of grandstands and different components of the event, this is an opportunity that when the PGA of America knows that they have a partner with the state of Minnesota, they will look to provide permanent infrastructure and continue to return well into the future. We have support. We've talked with many in our community of the impact that this has, not just from an economic standpoint, but also from a charitable standpoint. The game of golf in Minnesota last year, at all the courses across the state of Minnesota, produced $71 million in charitable donations to support hospitals, kids, amazing initiatives. So this bill and partnership is going to continue to show impact, not just to our communities, but to the greater good. I would just like you to consider this bill. We appreciate the support that we've had. It has been bipartisan support, but the future is in front of us, and we do need partnership, and we do need to signal to the PGA of America as they are getting ready to make decisions for the next two decades on golf that this is a place that we want them, and we want to show our support.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Does the department wish to testify at all? Okay, questions for members? Representative Gomez, or excuse me? Representative Freiberg.
Sure, I'll just speak briefly. I mean, just looking at the revenue note here, this has a cost of $130,000 in FY 2026 up to $1,640,000 in FY 2029. Just, you know, at a time when we're looking to make cuts in human services, a sales tax exemption for elite golf tournaments seems pretty low on my priority list, and maybe I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Any other questions? Mr. Anderson?
Well,
did you have a reaction or comments from Representative Freiberg?
I'm happy to comment on it, but I don't think it was a question directed at me.
Okay. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you want us to show support for the PGA, which is a multi-billion dollar organization, in recognition of an event that's already coming here. So you want the people to spend a couple million dollars so that patrons of this elite event don't have to pay sales taxes. Not just this event, but ancillary events. Am I understanding this?
Mr. Anderson.
That is correct. I think the position that we're taking right now is we are in the bottom of the ninth inning negotiating future events in the 30s and 40s. They are bringing significant economic impact to the Twin Cities in the upcoming years, 26 and 29. They are under the consideration, and they're asking from other facilities in other states, is the state willing to support this? We're bringing significant economic impact, and they want to make sure that they've got a partner in those ventures. If the answer from the state of Minnesota is no, we are not going to see events in the 30s and 40s. There will not be championship golf.
So, Mr. Chair, you're saying that if we don't give a couple million dollars of public money to these events, you're saying that they're not coming here, even though this sales tax exemption was not in place when the decision was made to bring the Ryder Cup to this area. So we hear a lot of claims like this from, like, I'm sorry, from corporate entities of various kinds. If you don't shovel over this public money, we're not going to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I mean, that is, it's really a race to the bottom mentality. And the idea that you can't, like, compete on your own terms as private entities without some extra, like, subsidy from the people, it's not something that there's no evidence of any of this. And we hear this kind of thing all the time when we want people to come and tell us, oh, hey, that these are precious dollars that the people of Minnesota pay in for us to meet our obligations, our basic obligations to people. Okay, that mostly means educating our kids, taking care of senior citizens, taking care of folks with disabilities, providing health care for little kids. I mean, this is general fund money. That's what you're telling us, is that this almost $2 million is better spent to subsidize people who are coming to pay hundreds of dollars to go to an elite golf tournament rather than providing for the education that our kids need, for the local aid that our cities and counties need, or any other number of worthy causes that we have to rely on the public coffers for. And so I just have a problem with continually hearing, you know, these kind of arguments of, like, well, if you don't subsidize this particular activity, then we're never getting another PGA tournament here. I mean, it's a little bit like a threat. The other thing that I want to point out is that when I joined the tax committee and I learned about the tax expenditure budget, one of the interesting items in there to me was something known as the open space property tax exemption, which is a property tax exemption that's granted to private golf courses, private archery, and gun ranges. Under the thought, as I've come to understand it, is that there's some benefit, like having a private golf course in your neighborhood is akin to having a public park or something. I mean, I that's as best as I can come up with, is that some owners of these private golf courses at some point were able to come to this body and make that argument. And now we pay $15 to $17 million of property tax shifts that happen within localities where these entities are located. And so we already give private golf courses a break in our tax code. And I just really question, as Representative Freiberg talked about, I mean, our testifiers and our members are not, none of us have our head in the sand about our fiscal situation. So it's pretty audacious, I think, to come here at this particular moment when we're literally talking about cutting education or cutting human services to ask for a sales tax exemption for ticket sales that cost hundreds of dollars to attend an elite golf tournament. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, it is an audacious bill, and it has an audacious author. So that's kind of the way it goes. But with staff, with the nonpartisan, is there any way to calculate? I mean, we can calculate what it costs to give this exemption. Do we have any idea the millions and millions of dollars it brings in to the state coffers so we can fund education, we can fund social programs, we can fund health and human services? Is there some way to calculate that with the estimates of folks that would be coming in? I mean, the state of Minnesota makes out like a bandit on this one. I mean, boatloads of money coming in. So, yeah, we can look at the front end, but sometimes when you put an investment, you have to ask what's the return. Ms. Templin or Mr. Williams, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but I guess I kind of am. Mr. Williams?
Chair Davids, I'm not familiar with any direct estimate of that for this bill or sort of how you would calculate it. You know, I think if you wanted to do an estimate like that, you'd probably try to figure out what the counterfactual is, what would happen if the bill didn't pass relative to what it passed, how much economic activity that would generate, and then how much tax revenue would be collected as a result. So that's sort of how I think you might go about doing that, but I'm not aware of any analysis like that for this bill.
Thank you. Because, members, we're talking about just the sales tax. We're not talking about the sales tax on all the at the clothing store, the gift stores, the meals, the drinks. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about the tickets. Mr. Johnson, please state your name. Who represents the record, please, sir?
Hi, my name is Dave Johnson. I'm a favorite drinker, and I represent Hazeltine. I just wanted to clarify. My name is Dave Johnson. I'm a partner at Favorite Drinker and represent Hazeltine. I just wanted to clarify, listening to committee discussion, that these two events that are coming regardless of what happens with this legislation. What we're really trying to do here is there's another series of eight events we are trying to get for the state of Minnesota in the 2030s and 2040s. And the PGA is looking at a select number of localities in the Midwest. And if we get that event, that package, then we'll have, you know, a series of events for the next 20 years. If we don't get it, we will not have any more championship golf for the next 20 years. And so, you know, just wanted to make that clear that nobody's saying they're going to take events away that are already here. We're competing against other states that are putting more money in than, you know, what we're asking for, because we're just, you know, we're asking for the sales tax exemption. Would also point out that all the other ancillary sales tax revenue would come to the state if we're successful. If we are not successful, the state will get none of this revenue. So we are trying to respond to what the PGA is doing as opposed to us coming up with this on our own, because we're trying to negotiate this package. So that's kind of the genesis of the bill.
Any questions for Mr. Johnson? We do have several member questions here. The gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my question would be, Mr. Johnson, I appreciate you coming before us, but you know, it sounds like regardless, potentially, I mean, obviously, if this doesn't pass, the current set, which would be in a couple of years from the slideshow, would happen. Just from a competition standpoint, they put a value on that coverage. It sounded like 65 million people would watch it. You know, the state of Minnesota does put money into kind of the travel, so from Explore Minnesota. So we do spend money to advertise the state as a state. But they're, you know, from an investment standpoint, it sounds like, you know, from a sales tax perspective, you know, from an investment, you know, that bang for buck, we often hear that from a legislature, like, you know, it costs X amount of dollars if those events weren't to happen. And this ask, I'm guessing, is not in a vacuum. This ask is before you get your tea time in the morning, you would probably check the weather and check the competition for those tea times. A sunny day has more competition. A rainy day has less competition for those tea times. And my guess would be that what are other states doing? You know, what enticements are other states currently putting on the field of play? You know, kind of what are we looking at, you know, from a competition standpoint? So if we're talking not necessarily in 5 years, but, you know, it looks like there's a whole pile of competition when it comes to these things. And, you know, I think that's a worthy conversation to have, is say, where do we sit in the field of play when it comes to bringing these tournaments to Minnesota? I think there's a lot of, if you have 65 million people watching a tournament, you know, that, what does that mean for the resort industry? What does that mean to the hotels? What does that mean to all those other places that they will spend money? And so while they may save it, you know, we may cost us a little bit for just getting in the door, they're not asking it for sales tax relief on the hotels these people buy that wouldn't be buying those hotel rooms. They're not asking it for the Uber rides that they get from the hotel to the tournament. they're not, you know, all those costs and all those volunteers and all those opportunities for nonprofits to do things along the way. So are those parts of that the conversation in other states as well? Thank you.
Yeah, let me start,
Mr. Johnson,
turn over to Mr. Anderson. So a couple things. First, other states, they have various mechanisms that the state doesn't have, direct appropriations. Some have funds that to incent these events where they take some kind of increment from previous events and use that as a fund and then pay money on those types of events. You know, I think when we looked at the sales tax exemption as had been done previously, you know, for golf with the Burnett Classic years ago, it was done with the NFL for the Super Bowl, and it was just limited to the tickets as an exemption. To the second part of your question, you know, all the other things, you know, any sales on property, all the hotel revenue, all the food and drink, you know, for, you know, 40 to 50% of the visitors to Minnesota for the Ryder Cup were from out of the state or out of the country. And they tend to stay, and they go to Brainerd, and they go to Bemidji, and they play golf, and they see the state. So there's a tremendous amount of activity from bringing folks here to these events because of the other sales tax revenue that the state will get. And if we don't get it, then nobody, you know, I mean, we have to live in the world we're competing in. And if we don't get it, then that revenue doesn't come. And I don't know if you want to add to that.
Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think that analysis is right. And I think just from a number standpoint, I want to be clear on that. From a global perspective, it's 667 million households. So it's significantly larger than that. In addition, I think when we look at, you know, if we're talking about the 1.7 million, PGA America left $2.8 million in 2016 from a charitable standpoint on the back end of it. So, and that is going to help different organizations here in the community. So they are passionate about that and leaving a mark and are looking to just make sure that we've got that right vision into the future. As we look at that slide that came up, you know, we were just at Pinehurst in the state of North Carolina, invested $25 million, you know, there, and that generated 8 tournaments at Pinehurst now and into the future, which is going to generate over $1 billion economic impact for state of North Carolina, which all of those funds are going to their general fund. They looked at that analysis and said, this is a good investment. This makes sense. And I think from a fiscal impact standpoint, we're certainly respectful of the situation that the state's in and understand that it's a very small amount in this first biennium.
And Representative John, or, well, I was just going to say, and you know, unlike other venues, I mean, we've hosted 14 venues with tremendous impact, but you know, and never had to ask the state before. But you know, the landscape has changed because they want fewer venues. They're going to do packages so that they can invest permanent infrastructure in those states, and we can either be part of that future or not.
Chair Swedzinski, Representative Witte.
Thank you. I might have missed early on. So the Ryder Cup was hugely successful. Did you have a number on how much that generated in overall cost brought back into Minnesota?
Yeah, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The independent study came back in 2016 at $130 million of economic impact here to the state of Minnesota. Having just been in Rome in 23, that was forecasted closer to $300 million now. It's grown significantly.
Representative Witte.
Thank you. So that's $130 million that would not be in our state and get taxed and be an economic driver for other parts of the state, especially during Ryder Cups in the fall where you're probably seeing the best of Minnesota.
Sure, that is correct. Yeah, it's a wonderful time of year, and I think that's the beauty of these events. We're looking at the data, and people are, there's 500,000 people applied for tickets in New York, 45,000 received tickets. So you're coming in for a day or two, you're booking a trip and you're staying, and an extra day on the front end, an extra day in the back end, you're going to Brainerd, you're going to Duluth, you're going to Rochester. No. These events are supporting the whole state, which we're proud of.
Yeah. Representative Witte?
Can I just respond to that too?
Mr. Johnson.
While the second Ryder Cup is coming, you know, there is a chance if we get this package, we can get a third Ryder Cup. But if we don't get this package, we are not in a position to get a third Ryder Cup.
Representative Witte?
No, thank you for that information. That's very helpful.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick comment on, and this is nothing to do with like the folks here today, but just on golf courses in general. And I think for this bill here in our discussion, you know, who pays for this, right? When we talk about general fund dollars, taxpayer dollars from across the state, and the comment about permanent infrastructure, right, and like what that investment looks like, and what the dollars, I guess, proposed in this bill would do, and who would they impact is really important. In my district, a very big golf course closed a couple years ago, and no one wanted anything to do with it, right? And then the state had to put in $13 million to remediate the land to clean out all of the chemicals that had been dumped there to keep the green. For many years, and turn that into, you know, I guess, an affordable housing development. And so I think when we think about using public dollars collected from across the state and, like, you know, where we're putting stuff, we should also think about the entire lifespan of, you know, what we want to do with our I guess, public lands and public communities. So, you know, to us, our community, very grateful that we were able to find $13 million to remediate this piece of land and turn it into something good. But I think... also, you know, when we talk about what this looks like, who's paying for it, and then who actually benefits in the end is really important. Thanks.
Was that a question or a comment?
Oh, I said at the beginning it was just a comment.
Thank you.
Lifespan of using public dollars and, you know, who pays into that, and then who actually benefits in the end.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Any other questions or comments? Would you like to wrap it up, Chair Gomez?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. So as we heard, these events are coming regardless of this bill. We're being asked to spend millions of the public dollars to subsidize a multi-billion dollar corporation, the PGA, on the kind of hope that perhaps 1 to 2 decades down the line we'll get another one of these events. This would be a total waste of the public dollar were we to do it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And to close this, is any other member questions? To wrap it up, I would just like to say this is a very small price to pay for millions and millions of dollars coming into the state coffers. That's why I wish we could get, you know, it's dynamic, so it's tough to get those numbers. But for the little bit we'd be putting forward, these events bring, well, we've heard some of the numbers, into the state. So with that, I will move House File. Where is it? 3051. I'll move House File 3051. Be later for possible inclusion of the omnibus tax bill. Thank you to the testifiers.
Thank you.
Item next. Dotseth, House File 526. An amendment on that one. Welcome, Representative Dotseth. And I will move House File 526. Is the HO 526A1 amendment an author's amendment, sir? Is the amendment yours?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I will move the amendment, the H05261A1 amendment. Any discussion? Just to get the bill in the shape the author like, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? The amendment is passed. So 2-year bill as amended, sir.
Thank you, Chair David, Chair Gomez, and members of the House Tax Committee. Thank you for allowing me to present House File number 526. And also thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for being a co-author on this bill, which establishes annual fire and ambulance special district aid. In my district, the Cloquet Fire District was formed in response to the co-sharing issue of providing ambulance service as well as the challenge of providing ambulance, fire, and rescue emergency service in greater Minnesota. Their efforts have resulted in operational sustainable organization that has combined administrative operations and training of 4 separate fire departments. For example, through the regional approach of public safety, the district has reduced the fleet originally needed to provide coverage to the area by 5 large fire trucks. Additionally, these efforts have resulted in the area of insurance service organized ISO rating, which is actually a number 3, the entire district, which substantially lowers rates for members in that district. The fire district plays a significant role in Carleton County public safety with a 24-hour highly trained staff and advanced life support ambulance. Intercepts throughout the region and districtly routinely responds to complex rescue firefighter incidents as support of surrounding fire departments. While their model is one of operational success, fire district leaders do have concerns regarding the lack of funding available to ensure long-term sustainability as the unintended consequences of forming a fire district. Under current legislation, it's a lack of state funding support. Fire districts like Cloquet Fire Area District did not benefit from $300 million recently issued in public safety aid and currently does not receive annual aid from the state to assist operations of major capital expenses, such as facilities. This legislation before you today establishes annual fire and ambulance special district aid. Colleagues, it is imperative that lawmakers recognize that ambulance and fire special districts provide solutions to many regional challenges regarding ambulance and fire emergency services, and that they honor that recognition by creating a pathway to ensure state funding that is not withheld due to lack of applicable legislation. Joining me today in support of this bill is Cloquet Area Fire District Chief Jesse Boss and Bruce Blackletter Jr. From the Fond du Lac Band, who will further illustrate the tangible benefits and urgent necessity of implementing this legislation.
Thank you. Before you start that down, Arthur Dodd said this is Cloquet, and then who else would be added in? It'd be, who else would be added in? The Ojibwe, and who else?
Fond du Lac Band.
Fond du Lac Band. Fond du Lac. So it's just the two, or is there more?
I'll just, Chief, you got to answer that.
Okay. I will get some testimony here because what I want to know is of the groups that would be part of this fire district, what are their ISO ratings now? And you said Cloquet's a 3, which is very high, but the Fond du Lac Band of Ojibwe, is there's a 8 or a 7 or? Well, let's get some testimony here. That's kind of where I'm going with this. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jesse Buse, the fire district of the Cloquet Area Fire District. And, Mr. Chair, would you like me to take a shot at answering that question first, or would you like to?
Let's answer the question first. Okay.
And so the Cloquet Area Fire District was formed in 2009, so this is less about establishing a new special district as it is about an aid bill for existing special districts, and then any that will form under the legislation established in 2021, the 144F.01. And so regarding the ISO rating, City of Cloquet had a lower ISO rating, which many times will impact your homeowner's insurance rates. It'll lower those rates for those that have the lower ISO rating. And so the larger impact to ISO was the communities that joined our district, the more rural communities, the ones that have a smaller fire department or less equipment. And so collectively, the entire area served by the Cloquet Area Fire District has an ISO rating of 3 today, when previously it was many times a 6 or all the way up to a 9.
Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, okay, sir.
Again, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jesse Buse, the fire chief of the Cloquet Area Fire District, and Representative Dotseth did an excellent job of kind of highlighting some of the testimony that I was prepared to give as well, so I'll try and kind of skip through that. But I do appreciate you giving us a few minutes to discuss this very important bill establishing fire protection and ambulance special district aid. I would like to thank Representative Dotseth for his leadership on House File 526 and Representatives Kozlowski, Scraba, and Pete Johnson for their role as authors and advocates. Having bipartisan support demonstrates that you all understand that an effort to consolidate fire and ambulance services into special districts will be the future for much of our state. In 2021, the legislature passed a bill that allows multiple fire departments and municipal ambulance services to combine into a unified district, and that again is 144F.01. When you eliminate municipal boundaries, they're no longer a factor in the provision of emergency services, you can take a regional approach. And that allowed us to do what Representative Dotseth said and eliminated 5 large firefighting apparatus, 1 fire station. You eliminate multiple different administrations, training programs, response protocols, et cetera, and it all becomes combined and more efficient under 1 special district. Again, I'm going to skip through some of the points Mr. Representative Dotseth made. So we deliver service to 275 square miles with our ambulance, about 70 square miles for fire and rescue response. We serve areas that are cities, rural townships, heavy industry, the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Reservation, as well as a heavily traveled I-35 corridor through Carleton County. When a special district is created, they're separated from many decades or even 100-plus years of financial planning and the accumulation of reserve funds through the city or the township that those departments existed under. A newly formed district has immediate operational expenses, looming capital expenses, and more costly items such as facilities replacements to fund and consider. A major challenge we face as a special district in Minnesota is the limitation in funding opportunities. Representative Dotseth highlighted how none of the $300 million in public safety aid made its way to us as a special district. It was distributed out to cities, not specifically special districts like ours. We can't apply for certain state grant funding opportunities as a special district, and no system accounts for the impact of non-taxable government-owned land on our tax capacity. We didn't receive CARES or ARPA assistance from the federal government, as another example, and we do apply for any grants that we're able to apply for, and we did receive the emergency ambulance aid last year, and it was a very helpful aid to our organization as the holder of an ambulance license in the state of Minnesota. So thank you, legislators, for that. Over the last couple of years, we've worked with legislators to establish annual funding for fire and ambulance special districts. So this is a conversation that's been going on for a little while now. And the idea is to impact or lessen the what's seen as an insurmountable economic barrier in establishing a new special district. Many areas across the state have been investigating these special districts. I get phone calls and emails quite frequently from communities ranging from the suburban metro area all the way to the far corners of our state. And they're looking for solutions to create a long-term sustainability to the challenges they see in providing fire and EMS services. They're watching closely to see what actions our legislators take to support the creation of fire and ambulance special districts. And one more point I wanted to make in my testimony is that sometimes you have to brace something, sometimes you have to prop it up to maintain an important service like fire and ambulance in the state of Minnesota. But we need to, along with some of these one-time monies, we need to invest in a long-term solution, a sustainability, if you will, for fire and EMS in our state. Minnesota should encourage the formation of fire and ambulance special districts, support their creation, and work to remove the roadblocks for communities willing to innovate and build a more efficient and sustainable service. And again, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair of the Representatives, this is essentially what this bill will help do. I firmly believe we'll look back at this point in our history a number of years from now and see special districts becoming more common. We'll be able to enact efficiencies throughout the state, create some longevity and sustainability in many ways. And Mr. Chair, am I doing okay just to make a couple more quick points?
Sure.
Okay. I spoke with Representative Warwis at length just a few days ago, and we covered a broad range of topics, how this our special district was formed, talked about some of the challenges in the state, and Representative Warwis asked me about kind of a buzzword in fire and EMS right now, and it's resiliency. And we talked a little bit about what it means for our members, our firefighters, our EMS providers, our medics, our EMTs, and resiliency just allows you to go out and answer a difficult call, come back, and then do it again the next time we're called to help a member of our community, a member in our state. And to build resiliency, you need good physical health, good mental health, you need programs within your organization that support your staff. And what I'd like to see us invest in as a state is resiliency in fire and EMS. And that would be a bill, a program such as this, that helps provide a catalyst for these special districts to form, to find sustainability, to find long-term success in the state. And then one other real quick point, Minnesota Statute 144F.01, which I mentioned a couple of times, it requires that the governing board is comprised of elected officials from the member communities of that district. And so within that requirement, it brings transparency, it brings stewardship from those elected officials, the responsibility to ensure that the impact of this bill is to lower the tax levy in that district. And so I can assure you from my position, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that we do take that very seriously, and our goal is to lower that tax levy. And so even if there is an infusion of state aid into our system, that will in turn allow us to lower that impact on our local residents, and I think that could be replicated throughout the state. So, Mr. Chair and members, thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to the next testifier, and then we'll, if you could stay with us there, Chief. Okay, please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Blackner, Jr. I'm a Fond du Lac band member and the Emergency Management Director for Fond du Lac. My testimony is thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of this bill. Fond du Lac currently does not field a structural fire team. We field a wildland fire team, which would not allow us to fight structural fires. We contract with CAFD, work closely hand in hand with CAFD on a number of projects, and Can I go backwards a little bit? Fond du Lac has a long history of ensuring the safety and well-being of our community members as well as our neighbors. We understand firsthand the importance of properly funded emergency services that are the first and last line of defense in life-threatening situations. Fond du Lac works closely with all of our state, local, and regional partners as best we can, and Fond du Lac contracts with CAFD and has a close relationship with CAFD to provide this service. As the CAFD is successful, Fond du Lac can continue to remain safe and well protected. We urge you to advance this bill to assure fire protection EMS services, especially in rural, tribal, and other underfunded areas, receive the support they need to save lives. I'd like to say miigwech you all for this time.
Thank you, sir. Questions, Representative Walrus.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Jeff Dotseth, Representative Dotseth, for bringing this bill forward, and to your testifiers. I did have a very good conversation with Chief Buse, and very nice to meet you as well today. The fire district piece, by the way, the Cloquet Area Fire District borders the southern part of my district, and so I know they also are doing work there as well. And the fire district piece is something that, just talking about that alongside of this bill, the funding part of it, we're in a very rural part of Minnesota, and there's just so many unique challenges there. And so we have a lot of great volunteer fire departments like in my district, but the resources and the volunteerism, like the ratings, you can't reach the ratings that these folks have been able to get to. So I applaud the organization. We've done a lot of legislation recently that has been passed to fund rural EMS, but we haven't yet solved the overall crisis of funding and staffing those services in most of rural Minnesota. So I just applaud you for taking that huge step and also for trying to find a way to get it funded, because it's very effective. It's not necessarily going to be cheaper for folks, like you say, but when someone calls 911, they expect folks to show up. And in rural Minnesota, there's less and less folks to show up. And so I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill and for your hard work on it.
Thank you, Representative Warris. Anyone from the audience wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? The department wish to testify? Okay, thank you. Okay, so questions from members. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, and I'm going to make a statement here, and maybe you can add on. Fire and EMS districts are two different things. In your case, you combine them into one. We looked at these extremely closely as we're looking at the challenge of funding EMS. In fact, I think Representative Backer's in a press conference yelling about this right now. Getting texting on it. This is a really, really big challenging thing, because the concern with your particular district we looked at real closely was, do you have the tax base to support what you really need? And maybe you might, but other places around the state definitely do not. And it'll put a burden on our taxpayers even more. We as legislators, unfortunately, are in a bad year, but we as legislators really have to look at funding these sources. Your source really is public funding. The other one's more complicated because it drives insurance dollars and stuff like that, but we have these failing all over the state, and we have to figure this out. I appreciate you stepping forward on this and helping us make some decisions, and I know you're looking for every possible option. But I don't want legislators to hang on this being the only option. I believe you had some trouble with doing this before, county commissioners, but now it looks like they're all in support. When you went before, did your county commissioner slow you down at all? Or
fire chief?
Might have been a few years ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hewitt, I am not aware of any opposition by county commissioners, but that may have been before my time as fire chief. And to your point, we do have the full support of the Carlton County Board and the St. Louis County Board as well.
And Representative Hewitt? Thank you, Chair. I see that, and that's really good that they're there now. But again, I think we're going to have, when we come into counties and say, is there any way you can help us with this, their coffers are dry too. And so it's really a challenge, and it's a challenge that's going to be put before us for the next few years. We want to help. We want to help because we know the dire need. And the other thing is about your district, it's not just you, your citizens in that district that you use. That highway that goes through there, your ambulance is out there all the time. That you have a lot of cabins and stuff like that are people in my district. So we need to figure this out. This is a statewide issue. I appreciate you coming forward, and I hope we can do something here. Thank you, Chair.
And thank you, Representative Hewitt, for all the work you've done in the past on this very issue. Other questions? Okay, we'll wrap it up here. Chair Gomez?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Representative Kozlowski.
Chair Davids, thank you for, I just wanted to chime in quickly and thank Representative Dotseth and to our testifiers, Chief and from Fond du Lac Reservation for your leadership and work. I know I have been out to tour and visit, and we've been engaged in a lot of conversations similarly. This borders our district, our fire department in Duluth. We share resources. We're working across communities. I also grew up in Esco and Cloquet, Esco Carlton, and Greater Minnesota. We stick together, and I think this is an example of, you know, when everybody's responsible, then nobody's responsible sometimes. And so I think just, you know, putting out there that the challenges and the unique situations that we're facing in Greater Minnesota, and it being with our tribal nation, you know, Medicaid, I mean, really high rates of folks and the reimbursement rates, there's a lot of challenges. All of those things that play into this. I know you're also seeking bonding dollars, and, you know, added strain on communities because there's an aversion to fund and support those types of projects. And so I just want to put a plug that whether it's this or it's another solution that comes forward and how to work through the issues that, you know, the cities when they got their LGA aren't flowing in, like you mentioned, the CARES dollars and other things. And so I just want to chime in and add my voice to working together to find a solution and solve for this and get ahead of it. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Any other comments from members before we go to Chair Gomez? Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the folks who are working on this, including Representative Hewitt. I guess, so this is like a very specific and targeted solution to a really broad, statewide, wide-ranging problem. And, you know, I guess I just wanted to say that it's like, you know, this is a proposal to kind of do a little thing for a specific area that's actually been granted a tool that a lot of other areas in the state don't have, levy authority. That's, you know, something that obviously the state has to grant. We need to find kind of more comprehensive solutions because doing sort of one-off patchwork responses is just, it's not going to, you know, actually get us to the point where we have a comprehensive system that works across the state, which is what we actually need. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Just a couple thoughts here. Do you have any endorsements from like the Fire Chiefs Association or the State Firefighters Association? Representative Dotseth, do you have
any? I'll turn this over to my testifier, but I believe in your packet you should have some letters of recommendation as well. And I believe my testifier actually had a comment he wanted to share, final comment he wanted to share as well.
Okay, we've got the back right here. I apologize for that. And to the fire chief, so you're saying that the entire fire district currently, so you've got the smaller towns in there and you've got Cloquet, they're all an ISO rating 3?
Correct. Yep.
Wow. How'd you do that?
You know, Mr. Chair, it's just through resource allocation planning and resource availability, and by combining all of those different fire departments, we're able to put ourselves under one umbrella in regard to the ISO review, and so we were able to successfully lower it for much of our district.
That's amazing. Representative Dotseth, would you like to wrap it up?
Thank you, Chair David. Final comment, I think pretty much stated right here, the testifiers, I mean, the heart is really into the community, and they've really done an excellent job. We've got bipartisan support across the aisle from legislators as well as community support. This is a good bill, and I appreciate you moving this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dodseth, and to the fire chief and to Mr. Blackletter. I'll renew my motion at House File 526 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, all of you. Item last, we will go to a gander bill. I will move. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. I will move House File 2658. I see there are no amendments. A two-year bill, Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 2658, which would provide a refundable sales tax exemption on construction materials for the East Grand Forks Civic Center Sports Complex and the VFW Memorial Arena. The project includes the following essential upgrades: replacement of R22 refrigeration plants, ADA improvements, parking lot repairs and replacement where needed, HVAC updates to meet current air quality standards, turf baseball field and locker room expansion through future fundraising. The sales tax exemption will enable them to extend the available dollars further to create a better project. Let me be clear, this project is not a wish list. It's been trimmed down, reworked, and scaled back several times over the last 5 years to reflect only the most necessary repairs and upgrades. Their mayor, when this project first started, wait, that was me, was kind of a jerk in that he vetoed the initial program to reduce the cost to local taxpayers. Then came COVID, high rates of inflation, and additional hurdles. Yet despite all that, the city remains committed to improving these public facilities. So a sales tax exemption would stretch every dollar further, allowing the city to meet necessary infrastructure needs and ensure that these facilities remain safe, efficient, and welcoming for years to come. With that, Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers who can speak more to the local need and impact.
That'd be great. Who'd like to go first? Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeremy King, and I serve as the Parks and Rec Superintendent in East Grand Forks. And thank you to Representative Gander for bringing House File 2658 forward. He touched on a lot of the items that I was planning to speak on today, so I'm just going to, I'll keep it short. A couple items. We are a community of about 9,000 people, the largest community in Polk County. Our indoor ice arenas have served our community as well. Our Civic Center is over 50 years old, and our VFW arena is over 45 years old. Throughout the last 7 years, the city and its residents have engaged in a thorough master planning effort and decided on how to best plan for these improvements and upgrades within our facilities. One other item that I just kind of wanted to bring forward was these community amenities have a far-reaching economical impact. In 2022, an economical impact study that highlighted winter sports in our area contributed $2.1 million in a direct impact for the city of East Grand Forks and brought more than 9,000 visitors into our community. And finally, the benefit of having the sales tax for supplies and materials refunded through the House File 2658 will help manage the impacts of inflation that we've faced in the last couple of years. Despite our best efforts to plan inflation increases, the timeline of this project has been a long one. From planning to first shovel in the dirt, 7 years will have passed from when the funds have become available. The funds made available through the tax exemption will be invaluable to balancing those inflationary impacts on our total budget. Thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the testifier from members? Okay, and your other testifier, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Reed Hutton, City Administrator for the City of East Grand Forks, and I think the other two said it very well. I'll just stand for any questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you. First of all, is there anyone else from the audience like to testify for this bill or with concerns on the bill? Department? Okay. I have a question. What is a green wave? Your high school mascot's the green wave. What is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can tell you I've heard it two different ways. One was it was when the city first started and it was as the grain was starting to grow and it was green and the wind would come across a prairie and blow across the fields, it would make a wave. And so that was the green wave. And the other one I've heard is as the basketball team was running up and down the court in their green uniforms, one of the fans mentioned, boy, that looks like a green wave running down the way, the court. And so that's how they came up with the green wave. So one of those two might be true. I don't know.
See what you learn in tax committee these days. Okay. questions for the members? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We'd like to wrap it up, or Chair Gomez? We'd like to wrap it up, Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was my first time testifying before you all, so I did bring treats. We can send those around again. And I just want to say thank you so much for hearing our bill, and we'd appreciate your support. Thank you again. Mr. Chair.
I'll renew my motion. How far do you have to drive to get down here?
Like 320?
Yeah, 320 miles. Four and a half hours.
320 miles? All of them. I'll renew my motion that House File 2658 to be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Chair Gomez, to tomorrow's meeting.
We'll be meeting tomorrow at 10:15. See you then.
Okay, that sounds good. Be there or be square is what I say. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We're adjourned.